You're listening to Orange County's only community radio station, OCTalkRadio.net.
Vans has always been a brand of shoe popular with a young and active demographic. Few of them may realize that the brand was actually started in the swinging 60s and that many of their baby boomer parents are huge fans of the Vans brand. It is estimated that the size of the global action sports market is valued at over $20 billion. The action sports market now has become a diverse demographic encompassing and embracing the outdoor and adventure industries, board sports, and mountain sports, just to name a few of its segments. Where the future area of growth will be most significant within the action sports market remains to be seen. VF Corporation's Outdoor and Action Sports Unit, which owns Vans, revenues have grown on average by 17% over the past 5 years. Kevin Bailey, president of Vans, is with me today because his firm is at the heart of the action sports industry. I've asked Kevin to be my featured guest today in order for you, my listening audience, to learn how the leader of a company that is both an iconic brand and a major player in the action sports market is positioning his firm for success within this highly competitive environment.
You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Rick Franzi.
Welcome to this episode of Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host, Rick Franzi. This business talk show airs live on Tuesday and Wednesdays at 4 p.m. If you're listening to this show as a podcast, we encourage you to listen live during our broadcast times. The goal for this show is to help you, our listening audience, make better decisions. If you'd like to join in the conversation today and you are listening live, then go to the radio station's community chat room, log in, post your thoughts or questions. Paul, our producer, will bring them to my attention, and possibly I'll bring them onto the show with our interview and our guest. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Kevin Bailey, president of Vans, to our interview room today here at Critical Mass, the radio show. Welcome, Kevin.
Thanks for the invite. It's great to be here. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. Let's get right into the interview. Kevin, could you talk to our audience about your career path and how it led you to Vans?
It's a dizzying one, so strap in. I guess I was the classic teenager that stumbled into a job in retail, and as most folks I think do, it was partially to get a discount on product and partially to meet girls in the mall, I think, back then when I was a teenager. But I stumbled into retail. It wasn't what I went to school for, but actually found I enjoyed the problem-solving side of it and the lack of a routine. I guess I developed some really strong mentors, and through that worked for some brands. I started at The Gap back in the days that The Gap wasn't just Gap product, and grew up through Banana Republic, the old Banana Republic, the Jeep and Safari brand days, and early days of American Eagle when it was a private company. Spent some time actually outside of ready-to-wear apparel in the toy business with a British-owned toy chain called Early Learning Centers that's part of the big publisher John Menzies. And then made it west and went to work for the big sporting company we all know so well in the Northwest, Nike, and spent 8 years at Nike running the retail operations. The toy chain probably was my first, national opportunity to run a brand from a retail perspective on a national level. And there I was the director of retail operations, added marketing to my responsibilities and oversaw marketing and public relations, and then left and went to Nike as we closed the U.S. operation of the toy chain and went to Nike to run retail operations for Nike of their own stores and built most of the Nike towns in the U.S. as well as the outlet stores in the U.S. and then spent some time helping Canada, Europe, Australia get their retail direct-to-consumer business going with Nike during, I guess, the Jordan era, probably is the way we best remember Nike from those days. And then came down to Vans back in 2002, with a slight stint of leaving Vans for about 2 years, actually came back about 2 years ago as the president of the company, and have been running Vans since then. And I guess, been lucky enough to be involved with founder-led businesses, whether it be the Fishers at The Gap or the Ziegler's at Banana. I've been lucky enough to be a part of companies like that, get strong mentorship, and that sort of has led me to where I am today.
At what point in your early development did you have a sense that this was the industry and the market segment, retail, where you wanted to build your career, or did you ever have that sense?
I know too many retailers that wish they could get out of this field. But I guess somewhere early in my, I guess right after college years, I got some crazy idea that I wanted to open my own store, and I was working in the outdoor business at that time, outdoor product business, and had the idea that maybe I wanted to turn my love for the outdoors into running my own retail store. And gosh, that wasn't long after college, but I never really thought at that point about that I'd be sitting here one day running a action sports brand in California, of all things, being I grew up on the East Coast in the New York market. But it probably was fairly early on that I found I loved the problem-solving side of it, the real challenge of managing people more than anything else, probably.
So you know, it's great to have it's not great. I love all of our guests, but when I have a B2C guest on, because when you said the various places that you worked, they're easier for the audience to identify with because they're, you know, consumer, commercial, retail, they can identify with them. Could you, in a thumbnail sketch, Kevin, you mentioned some very recognizable names. Can you give us a sense, in the arc of your career, you know, are they very different institutions as far as companies go and cultures? And is there a takeaway from that great diversity of experience that you had that sort of you would like to, you know, share with us relative to the, if they were diverse, different cultures, kind of what you picked up from the various stops that you made in your career track?
Sure. They were very different cultures, definitely diverse in their nature in terms of what promise they were trying to deliver to consumers in particular and what culture they tried to instill in their employees. I kind of viewed myself as a chameleon probably with the number of different retail brands I've worked for. I think in terms of how that ends up being important, well, first of all, I got lucky, I'd say, to some extent. I'd like to say I was smart enough to stumble through some really good brands in my day, but I think in years that, you know, executive search firms have looked at my resume, they've given me that, wow, you made some good choices. Well, I'd like to believe I did, but I'll definitely say there was some luck involved with that. But the biggest takeaway, I'd say, is by working with founder-led companies back in many of these, the origins of these brands that now are so large, it really was beneficial for me to be so close to founders who really poured their heart into a business, and that sense of ownership and accountability that they create, because of course they're personally vested in the business, and how they instilled that in me and helped me recognize the importance of keeping the culture alive, staying close to that and what the consumers expect of that brand from a cultural standpoint, sort of creating tribal storytellers in all of the retail outlets around the country so that story gets told broadly to as many consumers as possible and creates an emotional connection to the brand. So I think that's probably what I learned best through those years of being parts of those companies. I think Howard Schultz at Starbucks, you know, wrote that book about pour your heart into it, and I think that's very true.
And we're going to talk at various points throughout this interview about the culture at Vans and the history and some other things that I wanted to get into. But, you know, talking about founder-led companies, even though, as I said in the open, you know, Vans is now open, is owned by VF Corporation, you still have an influence of the founder's family within Vans today.
Yeah, no, that's very true. I've told a number of people a story about my first week at the company. I was sitting here, my family was somewhere else, and I was here by myself and sitting in my office trying to figure out what I was going to do that first weekend. I figured I'd probably spend one day at work and one day looking for a place to live, and in my office walks the son of the founder, and he's the vice president of promotions and events here, and said, "What are you doing this weekend?" And I'm Steve, and nice to meet you. And I said, "Well, nice to meet you too. I'm probably going to be here one day and then go house hunting." And he said, "Well, you know, we're going to be playing poker and eating meatball sandwiches for my Uncle Mikey if you want to come over and enjoy some time with us." And, you know, I don't know many places that actually happens. I was sort of stunned and enthused at the same time. It was a whole different corporate Kool-Aid than what I had been used to at some other places, like a big place like Nike. But I do find that keeping that family spirit alive here at this brand, we actually have three family members that still work within the brand, and I would say definitely not through a sense of entitlement, but through actually very hard work and good careers and skills in their specific functional areas. But being part of the Van Doren family, which founded this place, we make part of how employees think about working here, that they are part of the family. We talk about what would Paul do in terms of how they would solve problems, and we try and train our store managers and all of our retail direct-to-consumer outlets around the world to think about that. What would Paul do if he was faced with this consumer problem? And it does create that responsibility to treat your employees a certain way and for the employees to behave in a certain way as members of the family. So that is a big responsibility, and I take it very seriously. And then ultimately, of course, how you communicate that to the consumer. Who is Vans? Well, we're not just a sneaker company. We're this family-run business.
And so let's sit on that for a second, because I'd like to have you discuss. Now, people listening to this show today, right now, live, or at some future point on a podcast, like from iTunes or something, may connect to Vans and have an image in their mind of the brand and what it means to them, which is iconic. But from your perspective, what makes Vans differentiated in the market? And talk to us about the company as it is constructed today.
Sure. Well, Vans, at our soul, we're the original action sports footwear company. We were adopted in the early days of modern skateboarding back in, it was founded in 1966 as a company, and it was really founded again by Paul Van Doren to, his ultimate goal was to bring quality, affordable footwear directly to the consumer through his own retail outlets. It's now the largest action sports footwear company that exists today, with over 550 stores worldwide where we sell direct to consumers, plus, of course, a very healthy wholesale business. But it's really transformed, and this is probably what differentiates it. It's transformed more into a youth lifestyle company. Action sports is still an essential part of who we are, but as well now art, music, and even street culture that's part of youth today has morphed into part of our brand and what influences what we do. That's a big piece of it. In terms of what differentiates us, well, certainly the authenticity is a big piece. I know that's some of the things that I know Critical Mass thinks about when it comes to mid-market growth strategies is authenticity. And we take that very seriously as the original brand in the space. But then in terms of differentiating us, we are very disciplined about how we approach the marketplace. And I think it's what's helped make us successful or more successful than some of the other brands. We take the model that we use for the marketplace very seriously. It starts with the consumer. We then look at being a product-led company and what product we provide that consumer, then the marketing that goes along with it, and ultimately the sales channels we place it in. We're very, very disciplined about that and our guiding documents around that model. It allows us to create aspiration in the very top influential boutiques and core board shops around the country and around the world, and at the same time provide product that is a value-oriented product to the mid-tier department stores and family footwear stores around the world. So it's something that our competitors often look at us and wonder how we do it, but it's really through a very disciplined approach to market segmentation that allows us to stand out in the marketplace and be successful.
You know, you're in a highly competitive environment. Many of the people that are listening right now are probably thinking, "Oh, so am I." You know, I'm in this industry, I'm in this market, and it's highly competitive. And I don't diminish that at all across any of the markets and industries, especially as we've coming out of, you know, the past couple of years where it's been tough on a lot of businesses relative to demand. But when you look at a fast growing action sports sector, you being an iconic brand and the originator, that sort of sets you up as a model slash target, I would think, in some ways for the industry to be looking at. Plus, by the very nature of the fast pace with which your demographic moves, I mean, that's got to put a lot of challenge inside of your business model, I would imagine.
It certainly does. I mean, I think, I'm going back to early 2000s when our brand was probably in a rougher space. We were a public company at that point. Our stock was probably at an all-time low. We've had several really bad periods within Vans' history. That's sort of when we got our act together and recognized that we wanted to differentiate ourselves from the standard band of brothers that are the action sports brands out there today. And we really decided to stop measuring ourselves against our local competition in action sports and instead measure ourselves against best consumer brands. So we really expanded our our field of vision to include brands of much larger size. And we talked about brands like Nike, a massive sports and fitness brand, like Apple Computers, like Harley-Davidson. And the list went on and on, where we sat one day and talked about companies that we felt created aspirational product and brand imagery for their consumers, were leaders in their field from that standpoint, created great products, but also were highly successful, highly effective, highly profitable companies. And we said, that's how we're going to measure whether we win or not, not whether we're the best action sports footwear company out there. So I think that really helped propel us through some really significant growth years over the last 5 years. And we never really thought a brand could get this large in this sector in footwear. We have, and frankly, we don't see a lot of inhibitors to us now continuing to accelerate growth into broader parts of the youth lifestyle and youth culture businesses. It does place a target on us, certainly, although I think because of our forward approach to the marketplace and being very close to our consumers, we don't spend a lot of time worrying about that target. We really keep talking about what we need to do to stay relevant to the ever-changing teen consumer out there.
I think that's great learning, too, to talk about looking for companies outside your sector that exhibit qualities that you can learn and model from. And so that was a learning moment, ladies and gentlemen. Kevin Bailey, president of Vans, just gave you a gift of insight, and he's going to give us some more insight after the break. I'm going to ask Kevin to share with us his guiding principle that he's using today to lead and grow Vans. But first, let's hear from our sponsor.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Welcome back to this edition of Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host, Rick Franzi. If you're enjoying this show live today, then I would say log on to the community chat room, post your thoughts. Our producer, Paul, checks them from time to time, and possibly you can become a part of our interview today. Our guest is Kevin Bailey, who's president of Vans. And before we took the break, I let you know that I would like Kevin to talk about his guiding principle. So, Kevin, could you share your guiding principle with our audience?
Sure. I guess the biggest thing that I think about and I talk to people about actually all the way through the interview process personally is honesty as a primary motivator in terms of everything we do. We like to think our brand behaves with a very high level of integrity in our dealings with all of our accounts out there. And unfortunately, based on my experience, I don't find that every brand does that. But as a leader within the brand here, I place honesty as my number one core value and make sure everyone here knows that. I think it's important for several reasons. It builds trust, first and foremost, and I believe that's the most critical element in building strong teams. It encourages constructive conflict. When people feel honesty is valued in the company, they're not afraid to sit there and say what's on their mind and have that constructive conflict that I think really creates that healthy surface tension that allows an organization to really have breakthroughs and grow. It lets the greater organization know all opinions and ideas matter. And again, going back to my comments earlier about it being a family, all opinions and ideas matter in a family, and they do here at Vans as well. And I also think, lastly, I've really tried to foster a culture of learning here at Vans and really start building more and more towards recognizing everyone's development goals that they have for themselves and where they want to see their career go and how they look to take care of themselves, their families, et cetera. And I think in the mentorship that I'm really pushing for amongst our directors and executives here, I find trust to be the most valuable trait in a really strong mentor. If you're going to take seriously the things said to you by your mentor, you really have to believe that you can trust them with all feelings, all thoughts about, you know, your skills, what you need to develop, et cetera. So my guiding principle really comes down to honesty at all times in all dealings.
That is, okay, so that's a noble goal and one that I applaud. And in practice, it can be very challenging, I think, to walk that talk, Kevin, because people judge you, especially if you're the one as the president who put that out there as a clear goal for the organization, then you really have to, you know, live to that standard. I'm sure at times, I guess at times it might have been challenging for you since you've come back and you're leading the organization to make sure that you're walking that talk within the organization as well.
Yes, that's very true. I mean, there are certainly times to do that. I think as I came back to the organization, certainly, I think the first thing I had to do was acknowledge that challenge. I left a team here to go pursue a different opportunity for myself, and was asked to return into the most senior chair. And, you know, I saw a lot of heads going, no, we're glad you're back, through, I'll call, semi-clenched teeth, and whether they truly were glad to see me back or not was, of course, a question that I wasn't going to avoid that elephant in the room. So the first time I assembled the executive team, I let them know that if I were them, I'd be upset that I came back to run the brand, and just put that elephant on the table and said, let's talk about it, and how do we now deal with that, understand how do one of you get to take this chair next, and that's my job, I told them, is to mentor them and develop them and get them the things they need to ensure that when the next opportunity comes up, if they want it, that we've identified their pathway to get it. So, again, not avoiding that topic and modeling honesty right from the get-go. I had some, you know, less than great mentors in my life, some of which told me that I needed to work on skills that I completely disagree with. And there was a point early in my career, I'd say probably in the mid-80s, when I can recall the moment like it was yesterday when someone told me I needed to develop a skill that I completely disagreed with because it was not, in my eyes, a healthy relationship-building skill. And that really set me on my path as to how I wanted to lead organizations and teams. And I think I've been successful because of my, I'll call it, slightly different approach to managing and leading people, which is really more about being part of the masses and providing a very honest environment where anyone, down to the building receptionist, can come in my office and let me know when I've let her down. And there's no repercussions for that. So I think if I model that behavior, then am transparent in it, then it will foster in the organization.
And it is my experience, both from coaching and consulting with companies and organizations and having led organizations prior in my professional experience, that it's wise for you, for the leader, to embrace those conversations openly, because you know what? They're having them anyway, mm-hmm. and you might as well put yourself in the same room as the conversation so that at least you have an opportunity to understand it versus letting them have it when you're not in the room, because they will have those conversations, and it's wise to be in the room when they happen.
Right. I let them know that they're not going to avoid the conversation with me, so I'm not going to avoid it with them.
Fantastic. I wish I had a bell to ring, because there is another learning moment. Ladies and gentlemen, that's why we do Critical Mass, the radio show. My producer is ringing his imaginary bell, but we'll let that go. And let's move on. I'd like to ask you, if you could share with us a direct experience you've had as a leader of an organization where one of the powers of the peer group, and first book was on the power of the collaborative thinking that can happen when presidents, CEOs, business leaders get together with non-competitive CEOs, presidents, and leaders to work on challenges and opportunities that they face in their business. Kevin, do you have an experience where you've either benefited or you didn't benefit from being able to get peer involvement and insight? And could you share that with our audience here on Critical Mass today?
Sure. It may not be as clear as of an answer, but I think it'll make sense relative to what we're talking about. I think in terms of thinking about it, I think a lot about the focus on solid reasoning and how that has an opportunity to brainstorm with peers in these peer groups. The luck we have at Vans is we were acquired in 2004 by VF Corporation, and VF Corp owns a large stable of brands that enables us as executives to get together across very diverse brands and spend time together on a regular basis. So whether I'm spending time with the president of the North Face and their outdoor apparel brand, whether I'm spending time with the guys that run Lee Jeans or Wrangler Jeans or Nautica apparel, or JanSport backpacks. I mean, there's a wide range of peer groups that are actually part of our own company that therefore give you a lot of permission to ask things that you wouldn't necessarily be allowed to ask an outside group. So on a regular basis, we get time to do that. We may brainstorm around how can we be more effective with a large department store chain because a number of us are in there, and talk about what can I learn for Vans denim programs for the team business in action sports that I might be able to learn from experiences that Lee and Wrangler have had with their mass denim brand that they're able to manage. So we do things like that on a regular basis. And then likewise, we've actually instilled a process within the leadership team here actually this year as part of 2011 goal setting, where the executives on my team have to include a going outside, as we call it, goal specific initiative in going outside for peer advice on three of their 2011 goals. So that's something that we take very seriously, that people have to go outside and get peer reviews and peer information. I personally spent time at the end of last year with the CAO of a large food services company, as well as another person who's an author and a professor at Stanford, on organizational change and organizational dynamics as I think about the organization of the future. So when talking to other consumer products companies or this professor at Stanford, to get ideas on how those organizational shifts will affect people, the best way to approach it, some of the pitfalls. So that's the example I probably use today for myself that I found very beneficial, and I'm going to spend a lot of time in the remainder of 2011 doing that to really frame up how I would make some of the organizational changes I believe are necessary as we look at our next 5 and 10 year plan.
It's good to hear that you're not the only one in your organization that is encouraged or asked to get peer feedback, because I do think it's valuable not only for the president and leader, but it's also valuable for the key executives as well. Many times it might even be more valuable for them in some ways, because they are able to, especially if they've had long tenure with their current employer, it's good once in a while to get out and see how other companies are doing things and learning from peers. And as you said, they don't even have to be in the same industry, and I would advocate many times it's even better if they're in totally different industries than what you're in.
I'd even share with you, Rick, on that it's actually cascaded through the organization. So our head of footwear design took a bunch of his footwear designers, and we're going to go visit an automobile design studio nearby here with BMW. And they also ran to the guys from Volvo, who they then spent time with. In going there, they thought they were going to review creative spaces and how could they best align their space to better meet the needs of the creative designers within the brand, and look at what they were doing there, and then the tools they used in 3D CAD work, etc. What ended up transpiring was completely different and was not what was anticipated. They ended up with the BMW guys talking about how hard and soft surfaces come together, like in the interior of a car, the hard dashboard with the soft materials of the seating and carpeting, or headliners, and thinking about how that related to shoe design and the sides of a shoe, of a sneaker, meeting contact with eyelets or the sole and the hard rubber. So that ended up being an interesting conversation. And then while at Volvo dragged him into another room to show them cars and said, what emotion does this car connotate, whether it be aggression, speed, safety, luxury? And it led into talking about how product can communicate emotions to consumers. So it was really interesting to see how that experience led to all new peer relationships with a very diverse industry, but took them down paths of communication that were very different than expected.
Wow, that's a powerful example. Those powerful examples of unintended positive consequences. Thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back from this next break, I'm going to ask Kevin Bailey, president of Vans, to discuss the phrase "off the wall," how it got started, and its relevance to Vans company culture today. But first, a commercial message from our sponsor.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. By 3 with triple points on airfare, by 2 with double points on gas and groceries, and a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over 1 million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit axpgold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at axpgold.com.
Welcome back to this edition of Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host, Rick Franzi. My guest today is Kevin Bailey, president of Vans. And before we took the break, I said I'm going to ask him to talk about the phrase off the wall. Kevin, could you share with us a bit about its history and what it means to the firm today?
Sure. It is our tagline at the company. We do talk about Vans and off the wall. It's actually part of our brand logo. Off the wall started actually with two of the original Dogtown skaters, as they were called, which are really the origins of modern skateboarding today. Stacy Peralta and Tony Alva in the mid-70s were in our Santa Monica store talking about pool skating, and that's essentially skateboarding inside an emptied swimming pool, which is part of the origins of modern skateboarding and Southern California skateboarding at its essence. And they talked about getting air out of the pool, and that's what they called going off the wall. It's now turned into a mantra for our brand from that day forward and speaks to how we look at our culture inside the company, our culture of originality, of creativity, of self-expression, and those things are all at the core of all that we do here. We are an action sports company, and skateboarding is at our soul. So, if we aren't a little bit crazy at times, then we're not doing our job. So, off the wall is the mantra we use to describe, and I guess authenticate that a slightly left of center behavior at times.
So, I think it's important to have emotional touchstones for companies as they evolve. And, you know, this brand, as you said, was started here in Southern California in the 60s. One could imagine in a different world or for a different company that things like off the wall could no longer have relevance to the organization, to the people that run it, especially when there's an ownership change and other things that happen. And so I would have to imagine that as the leader of the company, you are somewhat and responsible for feeling and leading and sort of keeping that uniqueness alive inside the company. Is that a fair assessment on my part?
That's probably more fair than you know, Rick. My team and throughout the organization may know that I don't hesitate to get in the trenches with them, whether that be at a concert, at an event, et cetera. So they know that personally they see me as visible, available, approachable at most of the events we do, particularly around youth culture. So whether it be an art thing, an action sports event like a skateboarding competition, or a concert on the Vans Warped Tour, they will find me there, and I will be in the crowds enjoying the event, but also observing our consumers on a frontline basis. So they definitely know that I'm not hiding somewhere from them.
And so this kind of goes back to your guiding principle of honesty within the company, and I made the observation, in my opinion, you really have to walk the talk, and it's a high standard that the leader is held to. And I think in something, and that's why I wanted to ask you about the phrase off the wall and how it's still, all these many years later, is still relevant to the company, because it's important that the leader not just pay lip service to something like this, which one might be able to see how that could happen in different companies at a different point, but to me, that is the beginning of the end, maybe to some brands, because that's the beginning of losing your way. Because people can sort out the truth based on your actions and based on your and what they observe of your behavior. And so for you to give those kind of examples of how you're living off the wall and reinforcing it with your people and your team, I think is a really valid and important lesson to share on Critical Mass today, Kevin.
Thanks. No, and it is the good news for us as a brand. I mean, it could easily, of course, get out of control too, right? In the action sports sector, the lifestyle can be a little bit rambunctious, so we could let off the wall get completely out of control. The good news is we have the other grounding element of a family-based business that we're able to sort of reground it to say, hey, families have a lot of fun at, you know, family picnics or whatever, but at the same time, they recognize that there's a certain level of expectation in terms of behavior that's not too far, that doesn't take it too far. So the good news is I think we've been able to maintain a balance by having those two pieces at opposite ends of the poles.
Well, that's a great add to that thought. So thanks for kind of adding that last bit. I wonder if you could talk to our audience about a current challenge facing Vans and the ideas and strategies that you've either begun to implement or you're planning to implement that are going to mitigate, or at least attempt to mitigate, the challenge?
Sure. I mean, I guess our biggest challenge remains the oldest challenge that we all face in a consumer products company, and that's that the changing consumer, the changing retailers, the changing competitors. We all know we ran into a pretty fierce headwind here a couple years back with the changes in the economy. That caused massive changes in this space. The retailers really ran into problems with the independent board shops disappearing, discounting becoming more prevalent, and exclusive brands starting to be acquired by some of the discount retailers to sort of tell their own action sports story. The consumers certainly felt the pinch in their pocketbook. Teens had a hard time getting jobs, and they were the ones who would normally buy the product. And then, of course, the competitors. We've seen an influx of traditional sports shoe companies who kind of looked at this sector and said, hey, there's a pretty large sector out here in action sports, I think as you said at the intro, and we deserve a piece of that pie, so we're going to come in and flex our muscle and take some of that. So that challenge of all those different places changing, the axes changing within the consumer world, really is probably our biggest challenge that we continue to face as this sector changes. What we've used to really combat that is both an offensive and a defensive strategy. So we really talk about being on offense and defense. From a defensive strategy, we have to defend what we've been known for, defend our authenticity, defend our backyard here, which is this is sort of the nucleus of action sports here in Southern California. So we make sure we do that through making sure we have proprietary events, the right athletes on our teams. We still make the best iconic product that's true to our core and our roots of what we've been known for forever. And most importantly, that we maintain really healthy relationships with those independent board shops and boutiques that often are at the verge of struggling for existence, that we're here to support them and assist them in getting their story told, and that we don't let our brand become a discount brand. So them seeing that helps us defend who we are. And defend our place. And then we also have gotten on the offense and said, okay, how do we get ourselves into new markets? How do we look at product extensions that make sense? And real important in that entering new markets is how do we tell the story of this brand? You know, we could easily say, okay, let's go tackle China. Well, how many kids in China are familiar with the stories of Dogtown and the origins of skateboarding? Not many. So we need to tell the story and get that out there. And we launched a brand campaign about a year and a half ago. It was the first time we launched a brand campaign on a global scale. And, you know, to land in Berlin and see the side of a building with a gigantic Vans billboard that is the same billboard I'll find here in West Hollywood is just pretty phenomenal to see your brand resonate in a way like that, or to see the team in China put on an event and have the same feeling behind the event that we would do if we had it here in Southern California. So telling that story and staying a part of consumers' lives is really important. We also focused on opening the conversation more with the consumers and how we leverage how kids communicate today through the digital space and through social networks, and really have spent disproportionately reallocated our marketing spend against that to make sure we stay close to that consumer, and that we provide access to retailers for information, and really focus on that piece of it at our core. So that's probably a big piece of it. And then lastly, we focus on market analysis and planning. I think we weren't doing as good a job of this when the brand was in its really fast growth success periods, but we've spent a lot more time doing analysis and planning than we ever have to make sure we're good at it. And then I try and make sure the team stays calm and confident. Despite what's going on around us, if we stay calm and confident, all things will be okay.
Wow. Wow. That is worth reviewing when this is out on an MP3. For those of you that were listening live, don't worry. We'll have it out as an MP3 here shortly, and you can go back to that section and listen again. What a command of challenges. And what an interesting set of ideas for addressing them. Thank you for that, Kevin. That was very rich. Appreciate it.
Sure.
I wonder if we could do one more question, and then we're going to take another break. But before that, you referenced earlier about the four growth strategies that we talk about here in Critical Mass, the radio show, and that I work with companies with to help them to identify and leverage them. But I'm wondering how your firm and you have – you know, share some direct experience or describe, you know, how you've been able to use one or more of the four growth strategies to help Vans compete and differentiate within your space?
Sure. I think the most important for us is the one around authenticity and being authentic. We're talking about teens here as our primary consumer, and teens are inherently distrustful of brands and advertising and mass media, et cetera. So being worthy of that trust and belief from a teen consumer, if we lose their trust and their belief in this brand, you know, we're done. The party's over. We can pack up and go home. So we really try and focus on that authentic piece. We make sure they know that we are the original brand in the space, that we've been here since the first days, and that we remain classic. We remain iconic. We don't sell out. We're committed to action sports, and they see that through the things we do with events and athletes and how visible we keep ourselves. That we've had 16 years of being the owner of the Vans Warped Tour property, which, you know, if you think about a teen, music is a huge part of their lives. So the fact that we can influence, well, last year I think the number was about 650,000 kids in the U.S. experienced the Vans Warped Tour that travels around the country to about 50 stops over the course of the summer. Our activity in the digital landscape and how we remain authentic to them where they like to communicate, providing them content that they can lift and use on their own websites or on their own Facebook pages. And those are the things that I think in terms of, you know, what we try and do to maintain our growth in this market. The more we can stay authentic, the more important it is, because that teen consumer will swing so fast we won't know what hit us if we're not really true to that consumer and stay really close to them. I actually did some focus groups this week. I sat and observed some, and I'm observing more on brands that relate to teens. And to hear them lump us in with some brands that they view as iconic and classic and old school, and when the interviewer said, "Well, this old school, how can that still be cool to you if it's old?" And they said, "Well, because these guys never sold out. You know, I'll always have Vans in my closet." That felt really good to hear kids anywhere from 17 to 24 talk about.
Wow, that, you know, when we talked earlier about you being the steward of the brand, you know, you're in the chair now with the responsibility for that, and many of our listeners are wanting to own that position, want to create a brand that's identified with in their space, and then the reality is, when you're successful at doing that, there's probably as much challenge in maintaining it as there was in building it in the first place.
Sure.
Okay. You know, we're going to take one more break, and when we come back, I'm going to ask Kevin Bailey, president of Vans, to talk about a lesson that he learned that came, it was a valuable business lesson, but it came through a difficult experience. Sometimes we say, can you talk about a painful lesson you've learned in your business career? So hang on for that. We'll be back after this message from our sponsor.
Large companies with complex sales channels have sophisticated lead management needs. They require customized lead management systems and services and integration with additional systems. That's why, since 1981, these companies have relied on SmartLead by AdTrack, the only full-service lead management company with customized systems for lead management, Salesforce automation, and analytics. These systems are managed by each client's dedicated account manager and are integrated with SmartLead's in-house marketing services that include a contact center, email marketing services, print services, direct mail and fulfillment, and an ISO-certified warehouse. SmartLead by AdTrack. 3 decades of pioneering lead management best practices and systems for complex lead management needs. For more information, visit our website at smartlead.com.
Welcome back to this edition of Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host, Rick Franzi. And before the break, I mentioned that I was going to ask Kevin Bailey, my guest today, if he could share with us a experience where he learned a valuable lesson, but it came through a difficult experience. Kevin, do you have one?
I have so many, I can't count the bruises, Rick. I think the one that pops out strongest to me and the lesson I learned from it, it really was more about the negative effects of sort of power, politics, and silos in an organization. I sort of would lump them together. It was really a place where I'd say the leadership had gotten a little off track. You know, who had what title and sat in what office was more important than how we ran the business. And people became fearful for their roles and their jobs. And in that, I, of course, became one of those people who was scared at times. And I remember being so focused on working harder to try and prove that I was capable than really doing what I believed was right for the business. I had to show that I was busier and harder working than anybody else. And I got caught up in that, I think. And it was funny. There's those times when you sit there in the room and realize no one's willing to say what's really on their mind and say that the emperor's wearing no clothes, so to speak. And the lesson I had in that actually was someone gave me a book to read, and it's a book called The Heart Aroused by David White. It's actually a book of business poetry. And there was a chapter in that book that hit me like a brick in the head. And it was about learning to use your voice and learning to say what you really thought, because you really were going to stand by your principles and your values and what you believed in. And that was an earth-changing moment for me, and I wasn't at that company probably much more than about another year and a half, but I decided at that point forward I wasn't going to hold back so much on what I thought and what I felt needed to be done. And it didn't fit so much in with the senior management's opinions at that point, but those guys all were shortly gone shortly after I then left the company. And that probably was a key moment to me. And the way I've carried that forward, I think, you know, we talked about the honesty and how important that is. So that's been carried from that and become a way of putting that thought into practice. The other one I talk a lot about with people that I work with is finding that spark in your line employees' eyes. You know, when you're in an organization with a lot of employees, or even one with a small group of employees, how do you find that person on your team who has a spark in their eye and is excited by things and sees the potential and has a potential in them yet to be unlocked? And when you find that person with the spark, you know, your job is to pour gas on them and help them really combust into something much bigger than they are at that moment and help them see that you care about them. And I call it finding you in the crowd. How do you find that person in the crowd who wants to be you someday and sit in your chair and give them that boost they need to recognize that that is possible if they choose it? So I think that's the lesson I learned from being caught in an organization where the most senior executives did not foster that environment.
I really enjoy asking this question because invariably the answers that our guests give, as you have just done, talk to some foundational experience that they carry with them today in a positive way. And that's why I like to ask it, because it gives us insight here in the audience to you as a leader, because you had mentioned before you've had good mentors and managers and maybe not so good managers at times, and you can learn from both if you choose to and then apply it. So thanks for sharing that lesson and what it means to you today as you run Vans.
Absolutely.
Final question. Can you talk to our audience about what you see as the current opportunity for growth facing Vans, and if you're able to successfully leverage that, which I trust that you will, what's going to be the impact on the business?
Gosh, I think the big current growth opportunity is global. And global is a strange term for us because we're a heavily West Coast weighted brand, being founded in California, and action sports being much more prevalent in the California and the Southwest and the mountain states. Moving that brand connection from beyond the Western U.S. We've been in Europe for quite some time now, as well as Latin America and Canada, as well as Japan. We haven't had as much emphasis around growing that way. So really finding how to unlock brand resonance, awareness, aspiration, affinity, and even accessibility of the brand on a global scale is our biggest growth opportunity. Understanding the different needs of each of these regions and how they perceive the brand. You know, Southern California is the birthplace, but how does it mutate as it approaches these regions? How do we slightly change the face of the brand so the consumer can understand it better? And when is that okay and when is it not okay? China is a remarkably huge market for us. It has grown so fast in really the 2 years since we entered it, and the end is nowhere in sight in terms of what it could be. We can't move fast enough to accelerate our growth in China. The potential of Brazil and what that means to us, those places have huge opportunities, let alone as we've just really started to unlock the East Coast of the U.S., even this many years into the history of the brand. So how we do that, how we do it while staying true to who we are, you know, how do we keep the brand intact and then still morph to meet the consumer's needs and the consumer's perceptions in those markets? I like to talk about Vans as this multifaceted gem, and the challenge we have as a team is to just figure out which facet of that gem to turn to face that consumer to best connect them to the brand and say, oh, that's the part of the brand I like, and that's my entry into the brand, and now I'll explore it once I'm in. But making sure that we don't just turn the face that Southern California knows towards all consumers, because they won't connect on that scale.
You know, Kevin, I would like to ask that maybe at a point in the future, a not too distant point in the future, but at some time in the future, should your schedule permit, I would really like to have you back here on Critical Mass, the radio show. I think you've opened up a number of interesting thoughts that with a little bit more effort on my part, we could develop additional questions in some areas that go deeper, if you're open to being a guest on a future episode of our radio show.
Of course I am, Rick.
Great. Well, I have to tell you, it's been a kick in the pants for me to have the opportunity to share this time with you here on our radio show. I want to thank you for the time that I know that you put into preparing to be our guest, and thank you for being a friend of the radio show, and welcome you to the Critical Mass for Business community.
Thanks, Rick. Thank you for the opportunity, and I've enjoyed all the time you and I've spent together, and hopefully some folks got something out of this.
I think they did, you know, and I would be remiss if I didn't say, if someone wanted to find more about Vans, for those that maybe aren't sure where to go to find out additional information, where do you show up kind of in the internet and social networks?
Well, simply the easiest place to go is of course, www.vans.com. And through there, you can access pretty much everything we do, whether it be on our own, you know, URLs on our websites, and we manage, I think we're up to about 21 different URLs today, or you can flip over and get to our Facebook pages, our Twitter pages, our blogs, our photo streams, and I'd encourage you to explore, because we do quite a bit on social media and digital platforms. We launched a new idea around media called offthewall.tv, which you can also access through there, that has regular new content on a weekly basis. So that's the place to explore and learn all about us.
Well, thank you. I'm sure that many in our listening audience will take the time to do that. I encourage them, having had the good fortune to do that as a bit of prep work for having you on as my guest today. And again, I want to thank you for the time that you've given us here on the show. Kevin Bailey, president of Vans, thank you for being on Critical Mass, the radio show.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Well, I hope you, those of you in our live listening audience, and those that are listening at some future date on one of our podcasting sites, say Apple iTunes, have enjoyed our show today. And the interview with Kevin has provided you ideas and insight and information that you can choose to use to make better decisions. If you'd like to learn more about what we do at Critical Mass for Business, we being my business partner Doug Gefeller and I, then check out our website, which is www.criticalmassforbusiness.com, Critical Mass, M-A-S-S, for business.com. And, you know, until the next show, this is your host, Rick Franzi, saying I hope all your decisions move your company in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass, only on OCTalkRadio.net.